Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Carol Harnett. I'm the president of the Council for Disability Awareness, and welcome to our podcast, which is called the Financial Health and Income Network. Today, we are going to talk specifically to employers about how Social Security disability insurance works and how it can help protect employees who can no longer work due to an illness or an injury. And what's important, I think, for employers to know in a grounding basis around disability and disability insurance products is in the group insurance market, there is a product that most employers are probably familiar with called long-term disability insurance. And about a third of employees, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics in the United States, have what's called an LTD policy, a long-term disability insurance policy, that's either fully paid by the employer or partially paid by the employer. Then in addition to that, about half of Americans have some form of disability coverage, most of which makes up the difference may be a group policy that the employee pays all of the premium for instead of getting assistance from their employer, or they may be doing something called or having something called an individual disability insurance policy that they secure working directly with an agent or an advisor and an individual disability carrier. But today we're going to focus on this very specific type of coverage that is provided by the federal government but has a very well-defined process, including a very well-defined approval process, application process, and review process. And I'm really pleased to have a subject matter expert with us on the show today. My guest is Ted Norwood. He's the General Counsel and Director of Representation at Integrated Benefits, Inc. And we are very pleased that IBI, which is their acronym, is a member of the Council for Disability Awareness and supports us, so we thank them for that. So welcome, Ted. We're so pleased to have you here with us today.
Thanks, Carol. It is a pleasure to be here, and I'm really excited to let people know about how all this works because it is a frequently misunderstood system.
Great. And so if you don't mind, I'm going to kick you off in the most basic of all things, which is you and I assume it's sometimes everybody understands what SSDI is, and often we use the acronym almost all the time, and nobody, A, even understands what the acronym means, and B, really doesn't understand what the coverage is. So can you go right to the basics and ground our employer listeners in that?
Sure, absolutely. So SSDI, commonly just referred to as Social Security Disability, is a disability program through the federal government, Social Security system, that you pay into from your paycheck through your taxes. It covers anyone that pays in. It doesn't cover lots of federal employees, people that don't pay those taxes. Lots of teachers aren't covered. They're covered by different things. Railroad workers are covered by a separate policy. But you must pay in. And that differentiates it from the other Social Security disability program that people often combine with it or get confused by, which is SSI, or Supplemental Security Income, which is a disability program for people that don't have the work history or haven't paid in. It's a much smaller benefit. But SSDI is a better benefit. It's a pretty strong benefit. Average payout is, I want to say, $1,600 a month after being disabled for 29 months. You become Medicare eligible, and it will last until Social Security finds that you are no longer disabled or until you hit full retirement age. And they do reviews every 2 to 5 years, of your case to see if you're still disabled.
Go ahead, Ted.
I just want to say the best, if this gets really boring, because Social Security policy can bore some people, the big takeaway is Social Security disability is designed to work with long-term disability to provide the best policies. So the combination is the most important thing.
That's really well said, and it's a great basic summary. One thing I'd like to ask is, and I think it probably some of our listeners are not familiar with it, is I've often heard that you have to pay, quote unquote, a certain amount of quarters into Social Security before you would become eligible for SSDI. What does that mean when people say that?
So you have to work a certain amount. You know, if you just go out and get a job and then, you know, claim disability right away, you know, you haven't really paid in enough to qualify. And so they say that, well, the rule is about 40 quarters, which is about 10 years of work. And if you're younger than that, there's formulas for adjusting that. But when, you know, when people are applying for Social Security disability, you know, they usually have a significant amount of work history. And if they don't have the work history, then they have to apply for the SSI. You know, so most of your applicants are people that have a strong work record, but then, you know, they're at least not able to do the job that they've been doing anymore.
So that's those are just good points as well. So when you say a strong work record, is that a nice way of saying that these are people who are older, who've worked for a period of time? And if so, do you happen to know what the average age might be for a typical applicant?
Uh-oh. I think I'm busted here because I don't know what the average age of the typical applicant would be. But
okay.
I would say it would skew older. Young people are covered. You know, if you're working at a salary job, odds are you're probably covered if you're going through, or if you have a steady job or even steady seasonal work. But the average applicant is older. That's probably mostly a factor of the wear and tear that, you know, goes on to your body after years of working. You know, in your 20s and 30s, you're going to be stronger and more flexible, better recovery and stuff, less likely to have those overtime injuries. So I would say the average applicant is probably around 50, if I had to guess.
Okay, that seems fair. And when I think about what I know about long-term disability claims, we do know when people are younger, that is often when we'll see more accident-related reasons for being out of work, while illness is usually the major reason why people are out on long-term disability. Accidents will play a larger role the younger you are. And then the older you are, obviously, illness tends to play the biggest role. Now, you just made a point that I think is really important for employers to understand, which is a big differentiator between long-term disability insurance and SSDI, and that is this idea of what type of work are you disabled from? Are you disabled from your ability to do your own occupation or your own job, or are you disabled from being able to do any kind of work? And can you shed some light for our listeners on the requirements around your inability to work when you apply for SSDI?
Absolutely. This is a critical difference between the private disability and this public disability. You know, when people think that they're disabled, maybe they can't, you know, they can't work as an engineer anymore, or they can't work in their factory anymore, or as a teacher or whatever. You know, they think, well, I'm disabled. And if you have a private policy, then that'll mean you will be disabled probably for a couple of years at least. Social Security is different. Social Security, I call a catastrophic disability policy. That's an unofficial term, but it only covers you if you're disabled from any work. The language of the act says from being able to perform jobs that exist in significant numbers. And once upon a time, they liberally interpreted that, and they'd cut you some slack. But over the last 15 or more years, they've really cracked down. And when they say significant numbers, they mean almost any job. So, you know, if you are, let's say you're 49 and you had a really good job at a Ford plant, and, you know, you have some back problems, you know, maybe you had some cancer, something going on, something severe, you no longer can do that job. But if Social Security thinks that you can be a ticket taker at the movie theater on a full-time basis, which I don't even know what movie theaters employ those people, they're going to deny your case. And they use a lot of outdated information, which isn't necessarily their fault. But it's difficult, and they're very tough. So an important thing to understand is that if you're relying on Social Security, you have to be really, really limited. You know, if you can't do hard physical work, but maybe you could do a sit-down job, there's a really good chance you won't get your Social Security. And the terrible thing about that is that if you're used to doing hard work and then you want to sit down to a sit-down job, it might be really hard, especially if you're older, to transition to that. And so you end up in this gap where Social Security says you're not disabled, you're capable of performing some jobs, you're just unemployed. And meanwhile, unemployment says, yeah, you're unemployed, but you know, our insurance only lasts for so long. And it's really tough for people to find the resources to be able to make those transitions and get those jobs.
Yeah, that's a really fair point, because I know in long-term disability insurance provided really both by an employer and bought individually by the consumer themselves, when we look at it, does somebody, quote-unquote, meet the definition of disability, we don't expect someone who's done, for example, a job like a physician, for example, or a senior executive in a company, we don't expect them to do a job that goes outside of their knowledge, skills, and abilities. So we don't expect them to be that ticket taker at a movie theater. It's a much closer alliance to work that either is exactly like what they used to do or similar to what they used to do, you know, using what we call transferable skills. Sometimes, for example, a physician who is a surgeon may no longer be able to do surgery because she has a hand tremor, but she could do medical reviews for an insurance company, or she could see patients and screen them for whether they're a candidate for surgery. And that is a big difference between a private disability insurance policy and a public one like SSDI. Is that correct?
Yes. And I would add that lots of private policies that I've seen factor in income. You know, so mm-hmm. if you're a successful surgeon who develops a hand tremor, you know, and maybe you're making, you know, several thousand, $100,000 a year, but now you're going to go to an insurance review physician position, you're probably not going to come close to that salary. You know, the policies on the private side will lots of times accommodate that. You know, they might say, hey, you know, this is an offset because you're capable of doing this, or we expect you to, you know, try to find this, but they make up the difference. Social Security says if you have a really solid job making $60,000 a year, but we think that you might still be able to do this job, which is minimum wage, they expect you to go do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, now, and that, I think, particularly for employers, I think that is probably not on their radar.
No, when I've talked to employers and when I talk to, you know, claimants and people in general, you know, they really don't know anything about it. And I always tell them that that's fine, that hopefully you don't have to really ever know about the details of Social Security disability. You know, you find if you have to go through it, that's really unfortunate. But, you know, once you become an employer and you're making decisions about whether or not to offer policies to your employees, it becomes important to understand, you know, what they're really facing. If you think that someone, well, they can just get on Social Security, you know, if they can't work here, that's not as easy as it may sound. Unfortunately, I wish it were.
Yeah,
but
you know, now, yeah, you mentioned an average benefit, but because we're talking about the monetary side of Social Security now, can you help listeners understand the range of payments? And can you also clarify, is there a cap? Is there a maximum that somebody might receive on Social Security disability?
Well, sure. So once you go on Social Security disability, your payment depends on, you know, your work history and your payment history. And when I say your work history, it means, you know, what you've paid in. You know, you don't pay into Social Security if you make over a certain salary per year, a certain income a year. You only pay up to a cap. And the max benefit, what does it end up being? I think I want to say it's about $3,000, and it can go up if you have dependents because they give you you know, extra benefits if you have minor dependents during the same time you're out. But you know, you can't replace a large salary just on Social Security disability.
And is there a minimum
just
payment?
Not possible. Well, the minimum payment would be about $800. So the SSI benefit, which varies, and that's for people that don't have any SSDI coverage at all, you know, usually is somewhere between $500 and $800, depending on all the factors that go into that. So SSDI is always going to be, you know, better than that. And I say always. There's, you know, whenever, as a lawyer, whenever I say always, that really just means almost always. Because sure enough, some lawyer is listening saying, no, that's not true. Here is the example where it's different. And yes, so, you know, but speaking generally, for someone to take away, that I would say, you know, $800, but that's very low.
Okay.
You know,
but it's
and,
not a large
you know, this,
amount of money, and this is a monthly payment, just to clarify for our listeners.
Yes,
this
is a monthly payment.
It's a monthly payment.
It's a monthly payment, and you know, one of the things I should mention, I keep saying, you know, talking about lawyers, another difference between private insurance and the Social Security is you almost need to have a lawyer to get on Social Security. If you have a terminal illness, you probably don't. But you know, you're taking a risk doing it yourself. So, you know, to use Social Security disability program, it's strongly, strongly encouraged to use an attorney, even by Social Security. Private insurance, you don't need an attorney to get on. Now, sometimes there's disputes between insurers and claimants, and you might need a specific type of attorney when that comes up. But for the most part, you know, you don't get an attorney to activate your private disability policy. And that's a big advantage too.
Yes. You know, so you're leading right into obviously the next question, which is what is the process? How do you apply for when do you apply for Social Security disability? How do you apply and how does the process work and how quickly might you receive a decision?
So Social Security only covers disabilities that arise from a medically identified problem that will last or 12 months or more. So if you break both your legs, but you're probably going to be better, you know, in 6 to 8 months, then you won't qualify. You know, now if there's complications with that and it ends up taking 12 months before you can go back to work, then you know, could qualify, but Social Security is going to look at that very suspiciously.
Mm.
So the process is, once you're out and you know you're probably going to be out for a year, or you're facing, you know, kind of a grim diagnosis, there's a lot of really grim stuff we deal with in disability, obviously. Then you should apply. You know, once you're sure, like, yeah, I'm not going to be able to do this for a long time, then you want to apply, and you can file online at Social Security. You know, you should, really everyone should be online creating their MySSA account. You know, even if you're not about to apply, it's just good. Social Security is trying to really expand their online presence, and just getting that set up helps them out. But so you can go online and apply, or you can go up to your district office, the same place where you get your Social Security card or something, and file an application there. Social Security will take it, make sure you have coverage for SSDI, and then they send it out to the state agency in your state, which is a federally funded state agency, and they will evaluate you. The first step, that usually takes somewhere between 2 and 6 months, depending on how quickly they get your doctor's records, how backed up they are, how difficult your case is, if they have to send you to an exam or something like that. So after that first initial evaluation, you have about a 35% chance of being awarded, which means you have a 65% chance of being denied. The next step is to then file reconsideration, which is just a review by that same state agency. There are certain regions in the country currently where you don't have to file reconsideration, but Social Security just changed that, and they're moving to everyone going back to reconsideration. Reconsideration, it's the exact same process again, but they have someone else at the agency look at it. Obviously, since it's the same agency, they're not going to have the same award rate of their own denials, so it's about a 15% chance they'll pay that case. So an 85% chance you're going to be denied. And then, so, you know, now you are 6 to 12 months into your application. You still don't have benefits, and now you request a hearing with an administrative law judge. Your case gets back to the Federal Social Security Program, and they'll assign your case to a hearing office, which is different than your district office. And there's a long wait for that. It's somewhere between 12 and 20 months, depending on where you are. There are a few offices that are under 12 months, and there are some offices that are getting close to 30 months of waiting time. And now you wait and you build your case. Hopefully you keep going to the doctor. You don't get any benefits. You don't get any insurance. And you wait until you get in front of a judge and you explain your case to the judge. You give him all your medical records that you can get a hold of, and he'll make a decision. Hopefully you have a good attorney. And then at that point, you have about a 45% chance to be awarded. If you're denied by an ALJ, you do have an appeal within Social Security to their appeals council. It's another year, usually, and they don't send many cases back because they're really trying to not add to that backlog they already have, and they basically dare you to take your case to federal court. So if you then talk to your attorney and they want to take your case to federal court, you can do that, which the courts love because, you know, courts are always looking to have lots of cases. That's a lawyer joke. They definitely are not. they will, you know, so Social Security floods the courts with these cases. And then at that point, your case is no longer actually in the agency. It's in federal court. So you're actually suing Social Security and saying that, hey, you guys didn't follow your own rules and you wrongfully denied my disability. It's about 50-50 in the federal courts. But it's important to remember that most attorneys will only take very strong cases to federal court. It's a really long, it's a difficult process. And, you know, you can't just take your chances up there. You got to have a really good case. Now, I will say this, most attorneys only take really good cases to begin with. One thing I think it's important to know is there is a myth of disability fraud, and it doesn't really exist because you have to work so long to get coverage to even qualify. So if you haven't worked enough, your scam isn't going to work because you just can't get benefits. So you work long enough to qualify for benefits. Then you have to stop working and not get any income. And then at that point, after doing that for 2 years, you get awarded after a long, difficult process. So you go 2 years without income, and then all you get is like $1,800 a month, which is certainly less than you were making before. So it's a really, really bad scam. But people continue to think that there's a lot of fraud. And when most of the fraud is actually on the inside.
So I would ask a clarifying question. You've mentioned having an attorney help you with your case. Is there a charge for people when they have an attorney help?
So their Social Security has really set some strict rules on fees, and your fee always has to be approved by Social Security. And you cannot charge a fee up front. All fees are, if the claimant is paying it, your fee has to be contingent. And the max you can get is 25%. And if you use Social Security's fee agreement, the cap is $6,000. The attorney can charge their fees and expenses to a claimant. Most do, some don't, though. And some attorneys will ask you for some money up front to hold to cover expenses and stuff, but most don't. So it's pretty much free for you to get the attorney to do their work, but they'll only take your cases they think they can win. You know, if they don't think you have a case, then they, you know, it's not a sound business decision for them.
Great. Well, I can't believe how fast this time is going. So we have a little less than 3 minutes.
I saw that. I know.
I had to look at my list of questions. And I think the best one to choose at this point is, you know, in your experience, what final closing words of advice would you give to employers when you think about disability in general and Social Security disability insurance on top of that?
So group private disability insurance is a pretty affordable benefit, and it is a lifesaver for your employees if they go out of work. Fighting with Social Security is so hard. And everyone that we represent that has LTD says, you know, that $10 a month was the best decision I ever made. And it they get their benefits quicker. They still have to go through the Social Security process because there's an offset to that LTD. But they have money. You know, they're getting something. They're not scrambling. Social Security, if you have to wait for Social Security, it doesn't just decimate your spirit and your income, it decimates your insurance coverage, your ability to pay for the doctors who eventually stop seeing you. It ruins marriages and relationships, strains your family because people lose their houses. I mean, it is long and difficult and tragic. And it's so affordable and such a good benefit to give to your employees because they go out sick, they get cancer, they, you know, wear down. And they're so much better taken care of. It is such a thing that I believe in, that was not even on my radar when I came out of law school, that I hope employers at least look into it.
Well said. We were talking in the pre-show. I've known a gentleman by the name of Dick Mucci who currently runs the group insurance operation at Lincoln Financial, and he's worked in and around individual disability and group disability, so the private industry, his whole career. And he always said he couldn't imagine why employers wouldn't provide long-term disability coverage, because the most difficult thing for an employer to do is to lay someone off after 3 or 6 months, whatever their HR policy is, and to leave them without some form of an income that they could get through long-term disability. So with that, Ted, I'm going to say thank you so much for the information you shared. It's been a privilege to have you on this show.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. And good luck to everyone.
Thank you, everyone. Bye-bye.